Take a stand for life. Join Issues Etc. regular guests Matt Harrison, Molly Ziegler-Hemingway, Robert George, and others for the 2015 LCMS Life Conference, January 22nd through the 24th in Arlington, Virginia. The LCMS Life Conference is held in conjunction with the National March for Life. For more information, click the LCMS Life Conference logo at issuesetc.org. It's your time to stand. The 2015 LCMS Life Conference.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Well, it was difficult to sort out if you depended only on the New York Times and the LA Times and most of the mainstream press. You would have gotten the impression that this extraordinary Synod on the Family held in the Vatican some days back was a real beginning of a change, that everything that had been taught on human sexuality in the Roman Church was up for grabs, and that there was a real serious division that had never existed before on these questions, even among the cardinals who met there for that synod, and the Pope, Pope Francis, was leading the way of the change. Is that true? Joining us to talk about the extraordinary Synod on the Family, George Weigel. He's Distinguished Senior Fellow of the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington, D.C., and author of a recent column titled, An Extraordinary Synod Indeed. George, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thanks, Todd. Good to be with you.
There was a lot of very confusing press coverage and really a pretty big dust-up for something as preliminary as the Extraordinary Synod on the Family. After all of that is done, said and done, at this point to pause, what is the most important thing our listeners need to understand about the Extraordinary Synod on the Family?
That the Catholic Church still believes what the Catholic Church has always believed about the nature of marriage, about the ethics of human love, and about the necessity of crafting pastoral approaches to people in difficult situations that combines the divine mercy with the truth of the gospel. Nothing has changed on that front. The second thing I think people need to have learned is to be very, very skeptical of mainstream media reporting that is built around the wait for the great Catholic cave-in, which the media have been waiting for 50 years, which is not going to happen. And if you read news reports that are filtered through that particular prism, you're going to get confused.
Why do you think this particular synod got so much press coverage?
Well, it's in a sense a reflection of what I wrote about Pope Francis in the Wall Street Journal last Thanksgiving. This pope has become a Rorschach blot in which people who are waiting in eager anticipation for the great Catholic cave-in have invested all of their hopes. This is a grave misreading of a man who has said on numerous occasions, I believe and teach what the Church believes and teaches. But these media narratives get set in concrete, and they're virtually impossible to displace. We had another example of it this past week. The Pope gave a rather anodyne, if I may say, address to the Pontifical Academy of Science, in which he made clear that the Catholic Church understands the fundamentals of evolutionary biology. This was then taken by numerous media resources as some massive shift in Catholic approach to these questions, where, of course, it represented nothing of the sort. So, look, as long as people are going to present Pope Francis as Hans Küng in a white cassock, you're going to get distortions. So that's not who Jorge Mario Bergoglio is. But people will continue to try to present him that way, advancing their own agendas.
You have noted the Synod on the Family, as you say, demonstrating the extraordinary self-confidence of bishops from dying local churches who feel comfortable giving pastoral advice to local churches that are either thriving or holding their own. What are you talking about there?
I'm talking about the Germans particularly, but some Italians as well. I mean, there really is something unbecoming about German bishops who are presiding over a massive pastoral catastrophe in cities where there is maybe 7% mass attendance on Sunday, having the gall to suggest that their attempts to turn Catholicism into some form of liberal Protestantism are the way the entire world church should go. I mean, that is just frankly ridiculous. And they need to be called on that, and I think they were behind closed doors.
Are you talking in particular about Archbishop Casper, who was quoted in the press as kind of, at least it sounded like, being very dismissive of the growing Southern element of Archbishop?
Well, it's not only Cardinal Casper, but he represents that cast of mind in a serious way. I think the other thing that I find disturbing as a theologian myself is that, you know, theology proceeds from a process of debate and critique. And serious theologians learn from critiques of their work. Casper's proposal on communion for the divorced and civilly remarried has been shredded by responsible scholars at every level, biblical, patristic, theological, pastoral, canonical, and he refuses to accept the criticism. That is not serious intellectual work. Serious intellectuals thrive on criticism, learn from it, and move ahead from there.
How should we read what was apparent, at least from the press coverage, the value of that being kind of a sliding scale? What was on display when it comes to disunity, dissent, disagreement? You say discord among the cardinals?
Well, look, as I said in that same column, contention among bishops is as old as the Acts of the Apostles. Paul says, "I rebuked Peter to his face." Cyprian of Carthage was deeply disagreed with Stephen, Bishop of Rome, during the Donatus controversy. This goes back to the very beginning of the church. I think what has been brought to the surface is the fact that, A, there are Catholic leaders who have not seriously reckoned with what I called in that column the iron law of Christianity and modernity, namely that Christian communities that maintain a sense of their doctrinal and moral boundaries can survive and even flourish under the conditions of modernity, and Christian communities whose boundaries become so porous that they can't tell you who's in and who's out, wither and die. It is disturbing that some European bishops have not come to grips with that hard sociological fact of life. It's clear to me as well that there are some confusions in some minds about the nature of the development of doctrine. One would have thought that Blessed John Henry Newman had settled that one 140 years ago, but evidently that's not the case, so that's going to require some more work and discussion. Now, having said all of that, the ancient problem of how you speak the truth in charity and with mercy is a perennial problem in the life of the church. And that's really what we're talking about here. But that problem cannot be allowed to dominate discussion of the crisis of marriage and the family throughout the Western world, nor can it get in the way of presenting the beauty and dignity and nobility of the Christian view of marriage as the antidote to the collapse of marriage culture throughout the Western world. So, I hope the Synod of 2015 will take up a much more positive agenda. I think the Synod's message to the world, the Synod of 2014's message to the world and its final report point us in that direction. And we're going to have an interesting year between now and then.
Two final questions on that, if you would, George. Syndicated columnist Russ Douthat, a Roman Catholic, concluded in a recent column saying, and I quote him, "Catholics can certainly persist in the belief that God protects the church from self-contradiction, but they might want to consider the possibility that they have a role to play and that this pope may be preserved from error only if the church itself resists him." What's your take on that statement?
Well, I think Ross misunderstands Pope Francis. Ross Douthat is a friend. I admire his work. And he is certainly right that many people have interpreted Pope Francis as being a doctrinal innovator. I happen to think that's false. I do think that the synod process let loose a lot of questions that people had assumed were settled, and we're now going to have to make clear, you know, are settled. But at the end of the day, that is no bad thing to reinforce what is settled in the church. As for people making known their convictions, that's been going on for the past year in preparation for this synod. And it certainly went on during the synod itself, so Ross need not fret that that's going to happen.
Finally, you ask why the Pontifical John Paul II Institute on Marriage and Family, why representatives of that council were not there at the synod on the family. What do you think the answer to that question is?
The answer is that they weren't invited by the leadership of the synod, which means Cardinal Baldessari. And I think representations have been made that that was a very bad mistake, and I hope they'll be there the next time.
George Weigel is Distinguished Senior Fellow of the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington, D.C. He's authored a recent column titled An Extraordinary Synod Indeed. You can read it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. George, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks very much for having me, Todd. God bless you.
When we come back on this Friday afternoon, October the 31st, it's Issues Etc. Reformation Week. It's the last day of Reformation Week. It's, in fact, Reformation Day. Dr. Angus Manoogue will be our guest. We'll take up the subject of the Lutheran Reformation and its influence on science. Not a connection most people make, but there's one to be made there. We'll take that up right after the break.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
You don't have to live in the St. Louis area to take advantage of the great deals at Concordia Publishing House's annual warehouse sale. You can purchase resources online, November 3rd through the 10th at cph.org. Take advantage of discounted prices on many of the items you hear promoted on Issues Etc. during the Concordia Publishing House's online warehouse sale, November 3rd through the 10th, cph.org, shop online, cph.org.